think I could listen to The Cure all day long. I think I might actually listen to The Cure all day long. So, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR. Thank you so much for being with us today and allowing us to kind of invade your space. I can't wait to talk to Stacy, and I think we're going to have a great show. I hope that we're going to have a great show. So without any further ado, let's kind of get right into it. Stacy, if you do us a favor, do the audience a favor, introduce yourself. So tell us a little bit about who you are and where you work and all of that stuff.
Great. Well, first of all, we'll get along because I'm an 80s girl as well, and I can listen to The Cure for quite some time. But I'm with a company called Paycor. We provide payroll, HR, time services to the small and mid-market. I'm currently executive vice president. I serve as the company's chief product officer, and I've actually been around here a while, so I've worn a variety of hats, get involved in a lot of strategic initiatives, and in addition to product management, the service organization reports up through me.
Oh, wow, that's very cool. Well, let's do the what's keeping you up at night as a busy executive, and then I'll definitely want to get into what do you think is top of mind for your clients.
Yes, well, great question. So it's interesting. We serve companies from 1 to 1,000 employees, but we actually go up beyond that many times. But Paycor right now just reached 900 employees. We call our employees
Oh, wow.
Associates. So in many regards, what keeps me up at night is really reflects many of the companies that we serve, what issues they're facing. And I would say, you know, we've been fortunate to be growing quickly. So it always goes back to the people side, attracting and retaining talent, and overall execution in a growing enterprise. You know, this year our focus has very much been on onboarding and even re-energizing the engagement and onboarding of existing associates. And those are just levers back to attracting and retaining good people.
So managing growth is a great topic, and obviously you've been at Paycor for a long time. You've kind of seen growth firsthand.
Yes.
You've had your hands in the dirt with it. How do you do you have any hacks for that? Do you have any advice for people that are, you know, 12 employees and they're thinking about, you know, their 30th employee, et cetera. Do you have any advice for folks that are going through high growth?
I am doubling down on the hack that is change management. My advice for HR professionals is to try to make that a competency either within themselves, especially for smaller organizations, but maybe have a competency on a team for those who are larger. Because I think this environment is changing so rapidly. I am a student of what happens in the large enterprise arena, but I am seeing the pace quickening in the smaller target markets, of the pace of change quickening. And so it's as much about knowing certain disciplines as it is being able to adapt and figure out processes that allow for adequate communication and being able to convey a vision and the why behind change occurs, and maybe having the infrastructures through change. I know one way we do that here internally is through a social intranet or by regular, you know, distributions of strategic communications. But to me, the hack is really being nimble, being able to adapt quickly and to lead through that.
So let me ask a hiring question about adaptability or people that can kind of consume change. Like we know that change is hard. It's hard for everybody. It's hard for you. It's hard for me. It's hard for everybody that we know. But some people seem like they can consume more change than others, or some people struggle with it. And it isn't the age stuff. It isn't, you know, where you're from. It isn't any of that simple stuff. It's two candidates. One can consume change, and one can't consume change as fast. How do you know to hire, or how do you identify those people in the hiring process?
Yeah, you know, this is, you know, that's actually a kind of tough question. But I sense that when I do interviewing myself, I'm probing on that. And how I do it is I'm trying to figure out whether a candidate really matches up with our what we call our guiding principles. You might call them values. So sometimes I say where we're headed as a company, you know, it's pretty much set in stone. But I am testing people all along the way, maybe asking for experiences where I'm testing to see if people can bob and weave, or if somehow how we are going to get someplace takes a sharp right turn, if that's going to, you know, kind of freak them out, that's going to be a problem. There are other times toward the values, you want to make sure someone is going to sort of hit the hot button when maybe something is not in line with the values. And in that case, perhaps they're less, you know, they're more resistant to change because, for instance, we're in the technology business. If there's someone in quality assurance that doesn't think something should go into production, we want them to be inflexible and sort of hit that button and say, this cannot go forward like this in the best interests of our clients or even our coworkers. So to me, it's probing on values, and this is hard to do, asking for examples and then, you know, situational examples and really assessing how someone flexes when faced with really values questions. But I don't think there's any system that teaches you that. I think it's organizational discipline and organizational culture, knowing who you are and who's going to fit in your environment.
Yeah. The only thing I've seen in experiential learning is where you put people in scenarios and you put them in situations where they have to do that right in front of you. And then you can kind of evaluate whether or not they have the skills or the ability to do that. But other than that, the normal people, us normal people, we don't have great tools. Because of your where you sit in the organization, I've got to ask you a little bit about the product roadmap, not y'all specifically, but just how, because I think HR, I think the folks that would listen to the call, I think they're curious as to how you decide what goes in, what stays out, what's prioritized, what's deprioritized, et cetera. Like, take us into the wonderful world the product roadmap.
Before you get there, I hope you don't mind if I draw a connection to your prior question, because what was in my mind is one thing at Paycor that we do is that we know change is inevitable, back to that change management topic. And one thing I'm really proud of that we've done is we have moved to a quarterly cadence of releases, which means we are always developing new functionality and then getting better and better at all the time at helping our users, both the employees of a company and the administrators and managers, figure out how to consume and use it. Having those quarterly releases really supports a continuous improvement process and really change management process. So while the roadmap is very important, sometimes we communicate it's as important that we are positioned to be responsive to growing business needs, to changing compliance landscapes, and all that sort of thing. Now, what's our heartbeat? How do we figure out, get the pulse of what needs to be included in those releases? Well, for that, we rely on a few things. I would say, most importantly, we've put into our client-facing applications a feedback button. And we use a crowdsourcing methodology to allow users to vote or even request an enhancement. And then each user is able to vote on a certain number of things so that we can force some prioritization. And we are accountable back to those suggestions. We'll say, this one's under consideration, or this suggestion is going into the next release. And so it's very authentic and transparent to our users. They really do have a voice in our roadmap. Another key thing that we do is really get face-to-face with our clients to understand their needs, but also how they work in their office. And we will do usability sessions either in their place of business or in our usability lab at our fairly new headquarters. We've built a lab so that we can observe, and our developers and tech teams can watch people interact with our software It's so innate to us, sometimes we forget that something might not come as naturally to an end user who maybe interoperates with the systems maybe every week, every other day, not as frequently as we do. So it's really helpful to watch them. And we're always meeting with clients, picking up cues about what we need to add to our products.
What's your take, your general take on user conferences and or client / customer advisory boards?
Well, I am a huge advocate for anything, and this is broader than just what we do, anything that allows an HR or business leader to bring the outside in. So to me, an opportunity to attend a user conference or some sort of training is really important, because that's how you can bring in fresh ideas and thought leadership to your organization. Now, for a software company, I think there's varying degrees of how that is measured in client retention and business outcomes. I mean, sometimes there's a lot of feel good on the company side. But for an HR practitioner, I would personally have a goal of, number of outside things I attend. And if I can't do that as regularly as I'd want, I would be taking advantage of all the tools available, like white papers, Twitter feeds, trying to find ways to bring that outside in.
So most people might think, I think there's this common, it's a myth really more than anything else, is that startups is where all the innovation happens. And it really does, it happens in recruiting or it happens somewhere else. And I know that to not be true and to be completely a myth. But if you can, y'all sit at the HRS, the payroll, time and attendance, you sit at kind of this core plumbing, and I get the sense that the vast majority of people that are out there in the ecosystem don't think that that stuff is sexy or innovative. Let's crush that myth. What are y'all doing?
Yes,
and it's okay to
myth.
Talk about Paycor. Let's crush that myth. What are y'all doing that's innovative?
That's a good question. Well, just to your point, it's funny. I was at the HR Tech Conference this year, and I had to step out for a meeting. And so I'm on hold waiting for this meeting to start. And the guy next to me on this couch or chair is kind of having a fit because he's trying to get an off-cycle checkout. So that core plumbing is really important. I kind of laughed. I'm leaving this big session where we're talking about big data and all these big concepts, and there's this guy, who looked pretty high, high power, trying to get a checkout. So that core plumbing is very important to people. And how we're proud that that's sort of our roots. But you're right. You companies are getting more strategic, even when they're medium-sized, and they have an appetite for more. But what the difference is in how we're innovating and responding is they don't have a dedicated HRIS person. And even if they, companies do have those types of resources, they're scarce. There are tons of priorities, and the pace of business is faster than ever. So we have to really work at making whatever we do simple, elegant, easy to consume. So for us, the secret sauce is creating an amazing consumer-grade experience, and also really watching how companies start with us and their satisfaction of how they use how when they get started with us kind of sets the tone. If they're able to adopt, we set up for success. So recently, an example of this is that we released a feature that lets small to medium-sized companies automate their onboarding of employee process. It is easy to use, completely unified. We're adding to it all the time. We've clearly met a need because it's so simple the way it's baked in. It's not like it's heavy to get started or anything like that. It's simple, and we are seeing amazing adoption above our expectations of that product, because we've made it so simple that a very complex client can use it, as well as one that is very has more straightforward needs.
So you've used business leaders, because you'll go one to 1,000. You've used business leaders, the term business leader, several times, and HR, and I would imagine at some point you go from selling to founder or CEO to selling to someone that's in HR, and I don't know where, at what employee headcount that is. But I really want to know what happens when you ring the bell. So sale gets made. What happens internally at Paycor? Like, what do you do to bring that person into the family?
Yeah. So we ring some bells. No, that's a great question. You know, we have really changed our game when it comes to client implementation, and we have created more of a business mindset where we're really trying to understand from the sales process and when it gets into implementation, why did someone choose Paycor? What was important in their business today or where they're headed, so that we cannot just focus on, you know, let's get this time and attendance, these work rules set up, but really drive to their business outcomes. And when we're unified that from the very beginning, when we are both wedded in that and understand who the stakeholders are for that, you know, it just makes for a simpler process. So we ask, you know, in an organization, who's responsible for what? What does success look like? What does the finish line look like? Then what we do is we create a project plan. We have software that helps us do this so that we can internally see a project plan and really give that to clients so that they can see sometimes in the change process they might be the holdup on something, whether it's providing information or reviewing information in a sandbox or something, or, you know, experiencing a learning track. So we are sort of nurturing and coddling someone through that implementation process and ultimately receiving very high satisfaction, which is really key to us because we boast a very high net promoter score. I watch it all the time. It bounces between 60 and 70%, which I know is very high in this industry. And so to protect that, like I said before, how someone onboards their company to us really sets the stage for ongoing satisfaction. And then we do all other sorts of touch points from there.
Oh, that's nice. So I talk a lot about this concept of data portability, where, you know, it's not siloed data, and payroll data is like the most precious of data because it's the one thing in HR we just can't make a mistake in, or we need to limit our mistakes there, I should say. Where are you seeing kind of payroll data informing either other applications or other systems, either inside HR or outside HR? Like, where else should we be thinking about payroll data informing either pushing or pulling data and connecting to other systems?
Right. You've commented that I've talked in terms of business leadership, not really parsing out the difference between HR leadership and business leadership. I've sort of already jumped that HR needs to show up strategically, and so that's why I consider them important from a business perspective. So first of all, advice to any HR business leader is to show up with the data they have. It's great if it's actionable, but just have the numbers at hand. And so when those numbers are at hand, even for a small to medium-sized business, you know, there are some factors that are really requiring that more and more. I think the biggest area is that of the changes that are going on in the benefits administration area. And especially probably the biggest thing on the top of our clients' minds is really how to handle affordable care requirements going forward. So in that, you know, I'm seeing a lot of people talk, or I'm hearing a lot of clients say they're hearing about transitioning their businesses to maybe a defined contribution model, or wanting to provide more decision support to employees to help them select. And that is data that's to make some of those assumptions or manage that reporting. That's where I'm seeing the need to pull out data. At Paycor, we've created a really, again, back to that usability, a really simple but powerful reporting and analytics tool that really you do not need, you know, an engineering degree to utilize. And that is a way that HR professionals or business leaders can actually pull out these things by just pointing and clicking, setting up the information to be scheduled or shared on demand without having to go to, you know, this reports creator or work in wait in line for, you know, this IT resource that never comes to allow them to get at the data. So I do think it's I hope that answers some questions. I think benefits and ACA are probably the biggest triggers we're seeing, but I would always bring data.
Nice. What are you seeing on two fronts? People are talking a lot about big data, and it's assumptive that the data is clean or at least structured or that we've thought about it in a lot of ways. So I want to get your thoughts on just clean data versus dirty data and what you see, what you think the future looks like there. And then also around big data and especially around payroll, what should payroll data be telling us? What insights should we be garnering from payroll data?
Mm-hmm. So I'll just confess that I can sit around and theorize about big data, but in our target market, a company with 350 people, they have to be pretty strategic to be even contemplating the data stores and looking at outside data, that the whole environment of big data. So sometimes I jest. You know, our companies are just figuring out what to do with the little data they have. And I don't mean little quantifiably. I mean little in terms of it, you know, not thinking about connecting LinkedIn and something else in these big things. So step one is understanding the data that they have. For us, you know, people are really using data to help drive decisions when they're very evolved. Our clientele still does a lot of forecasting and budgeting on spreadsheets versus third-party applications, so to do that, being able to get data out and just get it into Excel or be able to kind of put percentages on things is sounds very simple, but not what everyone can do. We are seeing payroll data inform, like I talked about earlier, inform decisions like how do we necessarily distribute our team in terms of part-time versus full-time? That's because of ACA pressures, trying to cheat systems, so to speak. I definitely think that small businesses are really looking also at figuring out cues of different departments, how they operate, but sometimes tying that back to the talent management side is really in a room looking at a spreadsheet versus having a report pop out. So getting the small and medium-sized companies more sophisticated so that they can use the data they have in a bigger way is probably an evolution that will come, and I think it will happen pretty quickly because that's, again, one of the trends that's coming from the top down.
Nice. We've got about 5 minutes left. Paycor is one of these companies that's gone about its business and become very, I'd say, quietly successful. And not a lot of chest thumping, not a lot of overspending in sales and marketing, et cetera. Do us a favor and kind of bring us into kind of the history of Paycor, where y'all started, you know, how many states you're in, are you profitable, are you public? Like, just kind of, if someone weren't familiar with your brand or your name, what should they know?
Well, and I appreciate that. We are a company that I mentioned values when we started. We operate to do the right thing. So I agree with you. Sometimes we've been a little understated, and I will tell you that we are driven to change that approach. We have about 26,000 clients, so we are not relatively small potatoes. I mentioned 900 associates overall, and over 180 in IT R&D alone. So we're a company that's investing in the future. We were founded in 1990. We focus on the United States. We help clients in every state. From a physical go-to-market perspective, we are generally throughout the Midwest and the South, but we aim to extend to the Northeast, which we're starting to do, as well as to the West. We'll do over $1.2 million W-2s this year, so the volume's quite high. And we have grown substantially a lot of times through great channel partners. We do a lot with banks. Bank partners love us because we have one back end that supports a very small retail customer as well as a larger commercial customer. We also work with a lot of great CPAs and do some unique things for them. We have a concierge service for them, for instance. Sometimes CPAs deal with smaller clients, and yet the smaller clients can't quite get information to them timely, and so we will help them directly with the client's approval. We are privately held, and you know, we're opportunistic. We've been extending our products, and I appreciate you letting me talk a little bit about ourselves.
Yeah. Well, I think people are curious. You know, if they're not already familiar, of course. All right, it's 2:15. It's almost 2015. What are you the most excited for as it relates to next year?
So you know, I think we are going to become a company that pounds our chest a little bit more, and so we will accelerate our growth. We really are doing, we have a lot of strategic channel partners that are in funnels, so I think we'll have a lot to announce in the year ahead. I think we'll have some new products to announce, and as much as we are high growth and focused on all these exciting things from a technology and product standpoint and market expansion side, you know, what's really important to us is who we are, and taking care of our clients and remaining intimate with them is really key. So it's an and. Do that and do all these great things, and I think it's just going to be a banner year.
And personally, development, personal development for Stacy Browning, what are you doing next year to get better at what you do?
You know, I am taking my own advice, and I spend a lot of time looking outside. In fact, I think I saw you last going outside and meeting new people. So I do that. I'm attending more conferences than I have before. I'm really trying to figure out, especially in the service area, what service looks like in a technology business. So I've been attending a lot of things in that area as well, to benefit Paycor and myself personally. So I really believe in getting that thought leadership juice and being able to bring it inside and make ourselves more productive and more successful.
Well, two things. Phil First at Horses for Sources, analyst firm over there, they do a lot of wonderful work on the services side. So as you're reading,
yeah,
and consuming knowledge, they're just great person to kind of follow. Secondly, come to Paris in late October next year for what is HR Tech Europe, so that you can start to see what a European expansion might look like in a couple of years, etc.
Go global. It sounds like fun, too, on top of everything.
Yeah.
So thanks.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? It's Paris, Stacy. Get me wrong.
I know.
You've
let's do
go.
It. I'll tell everyone I work with, hey, I'm already planning to be in Paris for work.
Yeah,
great idea.
I gotta. Right?
Yeah,
all right, I told you 30 minutes
idea.
Would fly by, and 30 minutes has flown by. I want to thank everyone for listening to Drive Through HR with Stacy Browning of Paycor and myself. We've had a wonderful show. Hope you've enjoyed it. And thanks. And we're going to run out to a little Sublime. Thank you, Stacy.
Thank you.